Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and I've got Jennifer Ann Gordon as the co-host today.
Thank you for stressing my middle name in such a natural way, Alan.
Well, it's just, you know, whenever I think Jennifer Ann Gordon.
You must, because that leads you directly to my books. But last time I was here, you started calling me Peaches, and I was hoping that was going to continue on.
Well, Peaches is still there, but, okay. You know, it's just I was making a point. Not a
yes,
good one. I'm tired, okay? You know, Left Coast Crime was a week for me, and I'm old. I'm an old bugger, right?
You are not old. Every time, Alan, you are not old.
Oh, I'm ancient.
You're vintage.
Vintage. Oh, my God. It was terrible.
You're classic.
Oh, that isn't what they were calling me.
Did it have some of the same letters, though?
Yeah. The C, for sure.
Oh, I was thinking the...
you name it, I was called, okay? It was just like, holy cow, I can't win. Actually, I don't mind being called names. It's kind of a thrill, in a way.
I feel like you're winning today.
I don't know. I'm ready for bed, so.
Already in your PJs?
Yeah, got my shorts, T-shirt, I'm ready to go, you know? I shaved.
Well, I put on makeup for this, even though we're on the radio.
Well,
that's the kind of day I'm having, that I'm like, I better be professional for this non-visual thing that we're doing.
Yeah. I would have put on my makeup, but I couldn't find it.
You couldn't find the right eyeliner to match the shorts?
No, I think my dog ran off with my makeup bag. I think he's had enough of that stuff. Oh, anyway, fresh back from Left Coast Crime, and I'm beat, worn out, tired.
Socializing's hard.
Yeah, it's draining. I need Geritol. Well, I went to we went to a panel from 9 till 3 every day, too, and then I did two panels. And you
said those panels went very well.
So yeah, actually, the one went really well, and the other one I was on with Gary Phillips, I think I really they were talking about things, and then, of course, Gary asked me about, because it was about research, and then I sort of talked about murder.
Like, you're supposed to talk about murder at Left Coast Crime, though, aren't you?
Well, that's what I thought, but I think everybody was kind of like, oh, everyone went quiet.
People were like, no, we meant like researching antique fixtures for the houses at the time. And you're like,
yeah.
Wow. Well, did you know in 1941, the most popular way people got killed was...
Yeah. They didn't seem to care for that, or they did, but no, it was good. You know, it all went good. It all went good. Now, and a writer I almost came across there was, she's got a new book out called They Shut Me Up. And that's what they tried to do. but that's a different story. So that's close to, I thought she was writing about me. So we've got Cassandra.
They Shut Me Up. Yeah. The biography of Alan Warren.
Yeah, They Shut Me Up, and it's like 10,000 pages. Listen, so Cassandra Myers, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
Oh, my God, nobody's ever said that before.
Yeah.
And we'll I don't believe it.
We'll see how you feel at the end.
I know, and she's like, please never ask me back.
Yeah. They Shut Me Up. So that's an interesting title, and this is an interesting book, so that you classify this as it's like a mystery, but it's humorous and it's dark. And how did you decide to go that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the title. So it's actually, it's the first line in an Emily Dickinson poem. And, you know, you have to differentiate yourself as a debut author. And I thought, maybe, I don't want to quote myself because I didn't research it, but I might be the only one who wrote a mob novel that has a title that is an Emily Dickinson poem. So hopefully I've got the market cornered on mob fans who also love M Dashes and Emily Dickinson. But
I think I'm your target audience.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Emily Dickinson, she's a writer?
Emily Dickinson. I know.
Yeah.
Alan's proving that he's not a little goth girl inside.
Oh, no, yeah. I certainly am.
You've got to embrace that. You've got to embrace it. Yeah. I think everyone has a little goth girl inside. That's what I'm hoping anyway. Cause yeah, that is kind of my target audience. But so I think just instinctively, I wanted it to be, I had a very clear conception for the ending and for the fact that it would have three narrators. And I think it grew really naturally out of the fact that I watched a lot of, and still do a lot of mob movies and mob TV shows. And love them to death, but also was very curious about the kind of second string characters. So like the mob lawyer, like the character that Robert Duvall plays in The Godfather, and then like the son that no one really cares about, like Fredo, but even lower on the rungs, like the nephews that no one really cares about. And I thought, I kind of want to do a story about them. And I think that naturally became funny because people are funny in the way that they actually are. And so I wanted to write something that was, I wouldn't necessarily call it realistic because I think it's definitely stylized, but it's a look at kind of the foibles that you may not see in the more like glamorized visions of the mob. And so I kind of instinctively wanted to make it a little bit more grounded and human. And I think the darkness and hopefully the humor comes out of that.
Were you part of the mob? Is that where you got your...
My question.
Yeah, well, I mean, just thought.
Or like, how many mob nephews have you been in contact with?
Well, yeah, like, you know, my handler in the witness protection program has told me I shouldn't address that. But I just found that whole world really, really interesting. I've come to it completely through fiction, but it's just, I love kind of closed off worlds with all these really specific rules and hierarchies that everyone follows. And so I was always interested in the mob and just the idea of organized crime and what that looks like, because organized kind of automatically means that there's going to be some kind of bureaucracy and someone's at the top and someone's at the bottom. And just knowing, you know, I think my entry was just knowing, being a person and knowing how complicated it can be to kind of jostle for position. And then you add, you know, the fact that these people are running these huge empires, but completely illegally. And then also, you know, there's always the threat of violence that's in there. And then it's all, you know, mixed up with, oh, I can't believe he got to come into the room first, or I can't believe he got the promotion that I thought I deserved. So I just thought that was a really interesting juxtaposition.
Well, and you've got a lot of humor in it. So how do you decide how far you can go with humor? Like, is it just do you have a natural feel for that?
I like to think I do. I don't think I ever set out to write a funny scene as in, oh, this is going to be a big joke. But I think kind of naturally, especially because I have three narrators who are overlapping. And one of the narrators is the mob boss's son-in-law, and he's trying to be an actor. And so his main plot is that he is auditioning for their like mob-fronted production company's like thinly veiled biopic about John, who's the mob boss. And so he's trying to impress his father-in-law and also auditioning for this part. And it is a spoiler, but he's not a terrific actor, but he definitely thinks he is. And so I think that's the kind of humor that, you know, just his expectations versus what you're seeing from, and sometimes you see him through the eyes of the other narrators, and the same is true for them. So I think that naturally creates humor. And then I think there's just a lot of naturally ridiculous. I mean, if you're, I don't know, sometimes I think, and I haven't committed a crime except for jaywalking. But I like to think that, you know, there's so much ridiculousness involved in hiding things. And obviously it can be really horrifying too. So I think you do have to balance that. But I think there's just inherent humor in a lot of just trying to cover up crimes kind of automatically becomes at least a little bit funny, because it's just, there are so many logistics involved that you wouldn't think about.
I love that. I mean, especially because as you were talking about before, it's like you're talking at the lower level kind of criminals in this, the nephews, the mm-hmm. uncles, all of these people. So in your biography, which I mean, your bio on Amazon, your bio on your website, you talk about how you love Boardwalk Empire, but you also mentioned how much you loved Seinfeld. And so I'm assuming it's going to be, I don't want to say Seinfeld-esque kind of humor, but that like humor of just people's idiosyncrasies, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And I would be extremely flattered if anyone called it Seinfeld-esque, because I'm a huge fan. But yeah, just like little moments of, again, kind of just like jockeying for position. I mean, I have a lot. So there's a character. So one of my narrators is the nephew of John, the boss. And his job is to be on the cleanup crew. So he really wants to be an assassin, but he's basically, I think one of the other characters calls him a glorified murder janitor. So he goes in and cleans up after the higher ranking assassins have come and left. And so he has this whole inflated sense of like, oh, I'm the boss's nephew, I'm next in line. And that may not necessarily be true. And I think that's kind of a very George Costanza kind of.
This is what I was going to ask. I was going to say, like, do you have a Kramer? Do you have a George? Do you have an Elaine?
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, it's funny. I think Brendan is the name of the nephew, is kind of a George, also in that he is always angry and always feeling like he is not getting what he deserves. So I feel like he's absolutely the type, like the episode where George, like, quits and then comes back on Monday. That's very much Brendan's vibe. And then, I think actually kind of a lot of them are Kramer, just in terms of like being pure id kind of, and making the wrong decisions. I don't know that I have an Elaine. That's a good question, but definitely.
You can definitely be the Elaine.
Yeah, I'll be the Elaine. That would be cool. But, but definitely George and Kramer. And I think the Kramers are the ones that cause the most trouble in the mob. I think they probably need more Elaines and maybe even some Jerrys, but yeah. And I will say Brendan has a Newman. Brendan has a very, there's a character who comes in who's kind of a low level drug dealer who starts climbing the ladder, who is definitely Brendan's nemesis, so definitely would be his Newman.
So during your writing process, when you got to, did you ever get blocked and just say, I have to do something to take my mind off this, and then binge watch Seinfeld and call it research?
That would have been an amazing idea. I'm going to do that for every next writing that I do. I think I was just, I so regularly am rewatching Seinfeld or Curb that it probably was just on in the background consistently in my mind. But I also think that there's a moment in The Irishman, which is another great mob movie, where one of the characters gets really mad that the other person is wearing shorts. And that struck me as such a Seinfeld moment. And so I think there's actually a legacy of mobsters getting mad about little tiny things that always makes me think of Seinfeld. So I think I'm not the first, but maybe I highlighted it more than some of the other ones.
Well, you know, three narrators. Was that difficult for you? And how did you choose which person was going to be narrating?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was difficult. It was more difficult than I anticipated when I first had the idea. But I liked the idea of it immediately because, again, a lot of my book is people projecting a certain image and then that being undercut by someone else and kind of bumping into someone else's image of themselves and how other people see them. So I think with three narrators, you're able to do that because you see one narrator come in and have this moment where, so I have, maybe I'll just quickly say, so Brendan, the nephew, who's the cleanup crew, is the first narrator. The second narrator is Harris, who's a black man who's John's lawyer and who's the mob boss, John's lawyer, and kind of his consigliere, like his second in command. And then the third narrator is Neil, the actor I mentioned, who's the son-in-law, who's married to John's daughter. So I wanted to see different parts of the lower level rungs. So Harris obviously is second in command, but the other two are much lower. And I wanted to play with how they see themselves versus how the others see each other. And Harris is kind of naturally, he's the most educated of the three, but I think it's fair to say that he has maybe not quite as many illusions and less, and he has more self-awareness, but they all three have that natural blindness in some cases. So I think that in order to do that, I wanted to have three narrators. But yeah, it was tough to balance for sure.
How do you define them? Like, so if someone's reading it, so they don't get confused on who's narrating at a time.
Oh yeah, each chapter. So they are differentiated. Each chapter goes Brendan. They just say chapter one, Brendan, chapter two, Harris, chapter three, Neil.
Now, you said before that you had a clear vision of the ending. Is this one of those times, I don't know about your process, did you just, you knew the end and you just let the characters take you there? Or did you outline it? Did they take over? I feel like you've described really interesting, quirky people that I as a writer would probably think these characters are going to just take over and I just have to channel them.
Yeah, I love that. I think they did take over a little bit, but I do think I God bless writers that can do things without outlines, especially stuff like mysteries. I mean, I don't think everything was super planned out. I did give them room to kind of interact with each other. And that was a lot of fun to find in later drafts, especially in the first drafts. Brendan and Harris didn't interact that much, for example, but in the later drafts, now Brendan becomes, I call him like a crime intern. Harris gets asked to kind of bring him under his wing. And so they interact together more. And that, I think that was kind of the fun surprises when the three of them in different permutations are interacting with each other. That was like the more spontaneous thing. But I do think in terms of the plot, I needed to get all three of them to a certain point, and they all have their own individual arcs, even though they're also very much involved in each other's storyline. So that part I had to plan, because otherwise I think I would have gotten way too confused.
So was this completely out of the blue and you wrote this just for fun and entertainment, or is there more to it?
I mean, it was out of the blue. I'd say I wrote it. I mean, I've always written. I always knew that I wanted to be a novelist. I was the kid, perhaps delusionally, who was like, oh, it's not if I publish, I would think when I publish, when I was like seven, you know, I mean, which is probably actually a good level of delusion for anyone trying to enter a creative field, that you're just like, yeah, I'm going to do it eventually. Cause you have to prep for a lot of rejection, of course. But yeah, I mean, I think I love mystery and I wanted to see if I could do one. And I just thought this was kind of I just liked the idea of doing a story about mobsters who live in a world where they've seen all the fictional mobsters. Like, they reference The Godfather. And so they think that they're in that movie, but they're in another movie. So, and I can't, I definitely fun and entertainment is a huge part of it, but I also, there was a point that I'm making and I am being coy because I don't want to say what the ending is, but I think if you get to the end, you will understand what I'm saying, in terms of trying to do a little bit of a twist on certain parts of the genre. So I'm going to be coy about that, but yeah, hopefully read to the end and you'll find out what I mean.
Yeah, you should be coy about it. You said, after all, it's a mystery.
Yes.
Where you said everybody's a criminal. There are no detectives. But you also, this is set in contemporary San Francisco. Is that correct?
Yes.
Like the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. How much does San Francisco play a part in this? Like, is it another character? Is it just happen to be where you're setting it because it's where you're from? Like, tell us about why San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't know if I would say it's a character, but I think, I mean, for one thing, I would say mine is not straight noir, but I think it's got noir elements, and San Francisco has a lot of fog, and that always helps for noir, for atmosphere. So I think that really helps. And to me too, it was just, I mean, I live an hour away from San Francisco. I've gone a lot, but I also think there are so many great, San Francisco is such an interesting city to me because it's, especially now, I mean, there are all these, you know, bright, shiny tech buildings, but there's also a whole history of, you know, the gold rush era. And even before that, it's got a lot of dark stories, and also kind of, it was a frontier town for a long time. And obviously being a port, there's just a lot of stuff kind of.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a cliche to say the dark underbelly, but I do think there's a lot of grit and history in San Francisco that you don't really explore. So I liked the idea of putting a crime family in San Francisco just because it hadn't been done that much as far as I'm aware. I'm sure there are more than I'm thinking of, and I also just think there are a lot of cool locations that I just naturally, I mean, I remember I would walk on the Embarcadero all the time and there are these big piers and they have these huge warehouses and they just go on and on forever. And every once in a while they would have the doors, the giant, you know, pier doors open and you can see into this giant warehouse. And I just always thought, well, that just seems like a mob crime setting. So like basically the opening scene, the second scene in my book is in one of those just because I couldn't resist setting it there.
Did you use Treasure Island at all? Because every time I've been there, I've just thought, God, there's probably like a lot of weird things going on Treasure Island because, again, it's like abandoned, empty buildings.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Now I'm thinking, oh man, I should have used Treasure Island. That's a great one. Yeah. I'll
go back
that.
To the edit.
Yeah.
Your characters, what kind of relationship do you have with your characters writing mobsters and stuff? Like, and is it like writing anything else? Do you sort of hear them in your head or do you see them like a movie or what's your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think I hear them more than I see them, but I think I do see them. And it's funny because I remember when I started writing it, I thought, I wrote it a long time ago and I hadn't written male narrators before. And I thought, can I even do this? Like, and especially thinking about mobsters, again, as a very law-abiding, frightened suburban woman. I just thought
you don't have to keep saying that. We quote unquote believe you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we have your police record here.
It's on. Yeah, it's on record. But yeah, but I just thought, like, how do I act? Especially like mobsters. You know, I mean, I don't have any experience that I know of having met anyone who's involved in organized crime. But what was funny is I remember thinking particularly about Brendan, the nephew who's kind of hot-headed and wants the promotion. And I remember being in line at the DMV and just being so irritated and just knowing that I was just, you know, this close to losing my temper and being a huge baby. And I just clicked in and I thought, well, that's Brendan. Like, that feeling is how I will connect to Brendan. And so I think that was really helpful. And I think for whatever reason, Harris was an easier character to access because he's kind of an educated smartass and I can relate to that. But I also think, yeah, I mean, I approach them a lot of times. I think I can, they're all pretty terrible people, but there's something I can sympathize with or relate to in all of them. I think they all have very human failings. So I think that's been my entry point, and I hope that's what readers see in them too, is that even if they're horrible, they seem like recognizably human.
Horrible characters are my favorite to write and read. So like, to me, I'm like, that sounds fantastic. Did you have a favorite character to write?
Yeah, I did actually. And it's funny because it's the guy that I described as being the Newman to Brendan. He his name is Casey Moore, and he's kind of the rising star that Brendan sees as a direct threat to him becoming the assassin. And Casey Moore he makes fun of Brendan relentlessly. I mean, he goes after him and basically for no reason except to toy with him just because he can. And I think, you know, I mean, I don't know how psychological I want to get with this, but I do think sometimes it's nice to write someone saying things that I don't know if I wish I could say them to people. I hope I don't, but just, you know, being like self-indulgently nasty to someone and making fun of something, that's really fun for me to write. And Brendan loves this true crime book that I made up. And Casey relentlessly mocks this true crime book. And it was a lot of fun to write that fake crime book, have Brendan love it, and then have Casey just absolutely tear it apart. That was really fun.
Well, it's interesting. So you'd had no problem getting into male characters either?
I mean, I was worried at first, and then I started writing and I felt like I had found the voice, and then I knew kind of what they were feeling, and it worked for me.
Yeah, you dressed up and acted it all out and do all that sort of stuff.
Unfortunately, I have discovered that I do make the faces of my characters while I'm writing, which is so that I actually was dressing up in a way, not physically, but I do in front of the computer.
Do you do the voices?
Unfortunately, I don't do the voices because that would be really one. Brendan is like, well, he's in hiding, but he was born in Ireland and I cannot do an Irish accent. So he has a buried Irish accent because he's trying to pretend that he's American. So I am not even going to attempt to do that voice. I think it might be a crime against the Irish.
Now I'm intrigued. I feel like my next question should be, could you please do your Irish accent now, Cassandra?
Well, do you do all that while you're like out at the shopping mall, you know, walking downtown and voicing out all these characters and acting weird and people are like, wow, she's a crazy woman. I mean, I do that.
Yeah. Only in the safety of my own home.
Yeah. Have you seen that Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman then too? I bet you have.
I actually haven't. That's on my list. But I love Snatch, which is one of his older ones. Wow. Yeah.
I feel like I was waiting for Alan to say something. I'm like, oh my gosh. That was such a great setup, Cassandra.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We're on the radio, people. Yeah. Let's keep it clean.
Keep it clean. I know. That was, man, I walked into that one. Sorry, everybody.
I mean, you should have seen my face. I was like, yes.
Her
is
makeup
exclusive,
fell right
Cassandra?
Off.
Oh, God.
Is that an exclusive
scoop? Yeah, that's actually about the level of humor in my book, too. So if you liked that joke that I completely walked into, please read my book.
Well, so are you going to make this into a series? Are you planning on going further with this?
I honestly don't know. I will say I have an idea for a sequel, but it wouldn't be a mystery. So, And it really depends on the ending. So I can't really set it up at all. But yeah.
So we can't even guess? Does rhyme with rom-com?
Yeah, I don't even, okay. I honestly don't know what I would even call it. It's a very, very early idea. The story is meant to be very much a complete story. I think there's something, there could be a jumping off point from that, but yeah, no immediate plans for a sequel.
So where do you get your personal inspirations when you're writing? And it doesn't have to be other writers, but you know, is there something that influences you?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely reading other amazing writers. I'm a huge reader. I was a comparative literature major at Berkeley, so I've read a lot, and I read even more during COVID because nothing else to do, right? So I think, and I read really, really widely, kind of all genres, everything. And so I think, you know, that's why, I hope that's why my writing is somewhat unique, is that it's pulling from so many different sources. But yeah, I mean, I love television. I love movies. I love, mysteries. Like, I think Tana French is, she writes Irish mysteries, which are very, very different from my book. And actually set in Ireland, really lyrical and beautiful. And, so I think she's inspired me, not directly, but just she pushes the mystery genre into so many different directions, and she's really literary and thoughtful, and she has terrific characters. And so I think, like, when I was writing this, I was thinking of that, not in terms of the style at all necessarily, but just in terms of hoping that you can write mysteries that have a lot of punch, but that also, I always love especially when a mystery's ending, is a very clear, like a thematic kind of gut punch. I hope that's true for my book too. And then I think just, you know, I mean, I think I'm inspired by daily life. If someone says something, including me, if someone says something pretentious or funny, you know, I'm always on the lookout, and I write it down, and I think, oh, I can use that. And so I like to put that kind of thing in my book too. And just little things that I've observed. Like there's a moment in the book where someone's mad because a fortune cookie has advice in it, not a fortune. And that's always bugged me. So that went in the book.
So what are you going to do next? What's coming up for you now?
Yeah. So I actually just finished a manuscript that I'm going to be sending out. That's very, very different from They Shut Me Up. It's, I guess I would describe it as surrealism. It's about a woman who kind of wakes up in this world where her doppelganger is an empress. And so I'm just gonna finish polishing that and hopefully get that published. That's the next goal.
Wow, that sounds like my life.
Waking up and having a empress doppelganger.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, it happens to all of us once or twice.
I love it. Yeah,
yeah, it's very autobiographical. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very relatable.
Yeah, I can get into that. So, listen, I'll tell you what. Are you doing social media? Do you have a website? Do you have places you like readers to come and interact with?
Yeah. So I'm actually pretty terrible at social media, but I do have a website. My website is Cassandra G. Myers. Myers is M-Y-E-R-S. .com. And I also have a Substack, which is called Authoress. So AUTHORESS. And that's probably the best place to find me. I'm also on Twitter, but a little bit behind, as Alan knows, because sometimes I'm a little slow to respond to things.
I just followed you on Twitter, and I'm honestly never on Twitter. So I was just like, well, I'll probably never see an update because I'm never there.
Yeah, same. So that's not a great endorsement for my Twitter. So maybe do the Substack or my website. Those are more regularly updated. But yeah.
Substack, boy, I tell you, Cassandra's just swearing away. Snap, Substack, just like filthy mouth.
What's going to be the next word out of her mouth?
All these gangster stuff.
My mom is very upset. Influence. I was just going to say, my mom is very upset at how much swearing is in my book. So keep that in mind, readers. But yeah.
Oh, and well, that goes on.
That's a selling point.
Yeah,
that's what actually, I thought. Yeah, my nipples got hard. Is there a lot of violence too? Is there murder, death, and all that, or is it violent and kind of graphic and that? What can readers expect there?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's not a ton of violence. It is violent, but most of the violence, just because my characters are lower level or like the lawyer, they're not going to commit crimes that blatantly in front of the lawyer usually. So most of it happens off screen. There are a couple graphic scenes, just FYI. I mean, they're violent people. It's a violent book, but it's less violence than you might think from a mom book, for sure.
Right. Were you trying to stay conscious of how you wrote that part, like the violent part, or?
Well, I think I just didn't want it to be that cliched thing of constant shootouts in the streets, which, don't get me wrong, I think there's a place for that. But when I was doing my research and I read a lot about mobsters and organized crime, and one of the things they said is you don't want to be killing people all the time, because that's what cops pay attention to. It's much better for everybody's business if there aren't really murders. So I tried to keep that to a minimum, because basically if you're dropping bodies all the time as a mobster, you probably don't have a good hold on your organization, and you'll bring more and more attention to yourself, which is what they don't want. So that was part of it. And I also just, I mean, I want to be conscious too, I think, of not glamorize. I really didn't want to glamorize any part of this, and I didn't want to glamorize violence either. And so I wanted it to be a little bit more, you know, grounded in that sense too.
Sounds to me like you've been in the business, but not.
Yeah, her lawyer told her, don't tell them about all the murders.
Yeah, there's something more
going on. If they know about the murders, they're going to.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on than we know. But
yeah.
What makes a good book for you?
To me, it's just, are you telling me something new or noteworthy about humanity on some level? I don't care what genre it is. I think all genres are capable of doing it. You know, anything from like Moby Dick to, you know, to The Godfather. I want to see something that is recognizably human and also maybe makes me think about the world in a new way. And I also think in terms of like mechanics of a book, I think characters, dialogue, and theme are the most important thing to me, but character probably being number one. I really want people who feel human, even if they're alien, you know, even if they're animals. I just want something that feels recognizably human.
So you kind of have to explain the characters, you know, the workings, like where they come from, why they see what they do in their world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want to understand. I don't think everyone has to be relatable necessarily, but I want to understand a little bit about what people are like. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of swearing in the book. She just says dick and snap stuff. She's just like, holy cow.
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
Just having fun. Yeah. I think it's also like, maybe this is a classic author thing. Maybe Jennifer, you could tell me if this is true, but it's like you're always kind of exercising what you're not like in real life. I think especially with this kind of book.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that you're writing mob stuff. I write horror. And
yeah.
Every when people meet me, they're like, but you seem so like bubbly and fun. And right. I'm like, well, my favorite dance is the foxtrot. Right. And then I'm just like, read my book. That's just death.
Right, right. Yeah, it has to go somewhere. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I fester it inside, it'll turn into tumors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh my. Oh. So listen.
This went dark.
Yeah.
Read your book. Read my book and Jennifer's. It's for your health.
Yeah. For your health.
Yeah. Mental health.
And yeah. Alan writes about serial killers.
There we go.
We've got this trifecta going on.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'll be writing about the people that read your books.
Yeah. Really quickly, I have to say, I'm because I'm assuming you guys are the audience for this, that I always rewatch Zodiac, the David Fincher movie.
Oh, it's so good.
And I was wondering why. I mean, I obviously love crime, but I serial killers really scare me. And I thought, why do I keep rewatching this? And then I realized it's a movie about obsessives chasing a possibly impossible solution that everyone has given up on years before. And I thought, oh my God, it's about writing.
How do you like the writing world? Now that this is your first official book and stuff, what do you think of the publishing world?
I mean, it's been really interesting to see it. So I worked at a bookstore, an independent bookstore, for years and years. So I was on the bookseller side of it for a little bit. And then I actually interned for a literary agent for a while too. So I've seen it a little bit from the other side. And so I mean, my book came out on April 2nd. So I really can't say a ton about the publishing world, but it's been an amazing experience. And it is really interesting to see it on both sides. But it's been a joy, honestly. I mean, of course there are difficult parts of it, but I also love that. I mean, I do marketing and communications in my day job. And it is interesting that book marketing is so, it is marketing, but I also have found that the community is so passionate, you know, that it feels, and like you guys, I mean, very friendly and welcoming community. Even in the 2 weeks that my book has been out there, I've felt really supported, and people tend not to go into anything like publishing, you know, for prestige or money, I would say.
We're not here for the money.
Right. If you were, that would be a terrible choice. So I've been really pleasantly surprised by the business side of it too. Everyone's been really wonderful and supportive.
Yeah. It's pretty good overall. It's, yeah, but you're not in it for the money. Jeez.
I mean, it would be really nice, but yeah, no, not anticipating that.
Well, you never know.
You never
She's
know.
In the mob for the money, Alan.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's just really a laundering outfit.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm publishing books, really. Yeah.
They're like, hey, we need something that's going to guarantee to lose money. Yeah. Oh, I know. I'll become an author.
That's true.
Oh, that'll be a great cover.
That would be a good cover.
No. Oh, this is a good idea for a book.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. So we've got, we're going to have your book up, website, and not your Twitter, but we'll have the other up. And so people can find you and, you know, good luck with everything. And we're glad you came on the show and, the book, They Shut Me Up. It's out now. And, you know, Cassandra needs some money. So get out there. Right?
Yes. And, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
Thank you, Cassandra.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.